Tonight is October 14th, and we are continuing our creation series. We're in, I keep calling creation till we create something. We're in Parashas Chaye Sarah on page 110 and 111, and we have been discussing the Abraham sending his trusted servant Eliezer to find a wife for Yitzchak. Now, last time, we ended off with two questions, I believe, and I could not for the life of me remember what those two questions were. So I was hoping somebody would. What's that?
You should listen to your...
No, so I tried to find it, and I couldn't find it. You must have put it on a temporary file. I couldn't find it.
Yitzchak go back?
I couldn't find last week.
What was the question?
Why can't Yitzchak go back?
Okay, see? Better than a pig.
That wasn't
somebody
that's
was listening.
One. That's only one.
Why couldn't Yitzchak go? Why does that? Okay, so why does it have to be the, why does it have to be Eliezer that goes back? That's really the main question, right? Do you want to know any other questions? Why can't Yitzchak go back? Okay, so let's recap. We said last time that Abraham is commanding his servant Eliezer to go, and he throughout the whole thing we pointed out how the entire time he's called the Eved, the slave. He's never referred to as Eliezer. We only know his name is Eliezer from a reference back in Parashas Lech Lecha. We talked about how the name Eved implies a complete subjugation to the one for whom he is serving. And therefore, Eved, which means slave, is a complement if you are an Eved to the right person or entity. So Moshe, the highest praise he gets is that he is the Eved of Hashem, he is the slave of Hashem. Because there, that means that he has subjugated himself completely to the will of Hashem. You cannot tell the will of Moshe apart from the will of Hashem. The similar thing is true over here, where the will of Eliezer and the will of Abraham are one and the same.
Let's
come. We're more chairs.
Okay. Yeah,
we'll
help
tonight.
Oh, that's wrong. Thank you. I'm sorry
for being
so late. That's fine. It's fine. It's fine. Just making nervous.
We're not
breathing. So the now we also pointed out that Abraham is sending Eliezer to find a wife for Yitzchak, and obviously he trusts him completely. He trusts Eliezer completely, but he, because otherwise, how can he entrust him with this delicate task of finding a wife for Yitzchak? However, he makes Eliezer swear for one thing. That what?
He won't take a wife.
Oh, before that, that's not the swear. The swear is
he won't
take a wife from the women of Canaan. Can only be from the place where Abraham comes from Haran. So, even though, this is how we built it up, even though Abraham obviously trusted Eliezer completely, so that he entrusts this delicate task with Eliezer, and I didn't even tell you last week just how much he trusted him, which I'll tell you about somebody I remember to in a few moments. So, he completely trusts Eliezer, yet for this point, not to take a wife from Canaan, that much he has to make Eliezer swear. And we pointed out last week that Eliezer had a conflict of interest, and what was that?
His daughter.
Okay, he had a daughter whom he would have liked Yitzchak to marry. And so he has to make Eliezer swear not to let Yitzchak marry a girl from Canaan. So even though it's very important to Avram that he trusts Eliezer completely, but this is so important not to take a girl from Canaan. So we have to understand what's wrong with taking a girl from Canaan. But even though that's obviously so important that warrants an oath that he makes Eliezer swear that he will not take a girl from Canaan for Yitzchak, nevertheless, when Eliezer says, what if she won't come back to Eretz Yisrael, and instead she wants Yitzchak to come to her, then what? What should I do then? And Abraham says then, he shomer lecha, be very careful, do not return my son to the land from which I exited, from the land from which I left. That you can't do. And if that's what happens, if she won't return with you, then you are exempt from the oath, and you can take a girl from wherever you please. You do not need to listen to the oath anymore. You can take a girl from Canaan. So, although it was so important that he not take a girl from Canaan, but to return Yitzchak to Haran, that would be the worst thing possible. And that, for sure, you can't do. And that is even worse than finding a wife from Canaan. And so, that's how we left off. What is so bad about returning Yitzchak to Haran? And really, what is so bad about taking a wife from Canaan? And how come, what's the better of two evils? Clearly, Avraham is saying they're both bad. It's bad to take him away from Canaan. It's also bad for him to go back to Haran. But which one is worse? It's worse for him to go back to Haran. So we have to understand what's so bad about both these things, and then why is one worse than the other. Just to show you how much Avraham trusted Eliezer, Avraham actually gave Eliezer a document that empowered him to make the marriage right there and then. Meaning that he could have given the document to the woman that he wanted Yitzchak to marry, and if she would accept it, then they would be married right away, which is a legally binding thing. It can be done, although it's rarely done, but it could theoretically be done that a man send the marriage document with a shliach, with an agent, and if the prospective bride agrees, then they can be married, even though he is in absentia, but they can still marry.
So this was a ksuba?
It would not be the ksuba, it would be a different type of contract. That is a legally binding way to get married. It's not usually done. In this case, Avraham did send Eliezer with that document because he wanted Eliezer to be able to make the marriage happen immediately so that there shouldn't be any reneging. Now that gave Eliezer incredible power. He could have married Yitzchak to anybody. In order for Avraham to entrust Eliezer with such a document, he must have really trusted him. Still, he made him swear not to take a wife from Canaan, and even so, it was better not to return Yitzchak to Haran. So those are the things we have to understand why they are so important. We started to say some ideas last week about why not to go back to Haran. So a couple of people said some ideas. What were some of the ideas? Anybody remember some ideas why not to go back to Haran?
Because he was Kodesh.
Oh, okay. Yitzchak was Kodesh. He was holy because he had become like a carbon, like a sacrifice at the Akedah Yitzchak, at the binding of Isaac. And therefore, he was never allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael. He could not leave Israel, as we will see in Parshas Toldos, that he can't leave. Even after a famine hits the land that he intends to leave, Hashem tells him not to leave. However, as we pointed out last week, that was not necessarily known by Yitzchak or Avraham, because the next week's Parsha in Toldos, Yitzchak does attempt to leave Israel. It's only because Hashem intervenes and says, don't go, that he doesn't go. So, I'm not sure if that was the sole motivating factor why Avraham said not to take a wife, not to return Yitzchak to Haran. So, why else would Avraham not want Yitzchak to go to Haran? And why would he not want him to have a wife from Canaan? What is wrong with the daughters of Canaan that Avraham does not want Yitzchak to take a wife from there?
It comes from this week's, yes, this Shabbos' Parsha.
Go ahead.
Canaan, the grandson of Noah, is seen by Noah to be cursed and evil, and he recognizes that, and that no one of his descendants should marry into this.
Okay, now here evil. Okay, excellent. Now here we have to go back to a thought which we spoke about back in Parshas Noach several months ago. And those of you who are here may remember the discussion, but we're going to refresh our memories about this, because this is the crux of the issue over here. Avraham says to Eliezer, you are Arur, you are cursed. I am Baruch, I am blessed. Ve'ein Arur mistabik b'baruch. So one who is cursed cannot cleave to one who is blessed, which means our children cannot marry. Now he doesn't mean it's impossible to marry, because when Eliezer says, what if she won't come back with me? He says, okay, if she won't come back with you, then you're absolved from the oath, from the Shavuot. So it doesn't mean it's impossible, but it means that it's not the best thing. So what does this mean, that he's cursed and he's blessed and they can't mix? So let us remember the story which we read about in yesterday's Parsha and Parshas Noah. Let us remember the story, remember the explanation that we said at the time, and let's connect it very, very clearly with the story over here. Remember that after the flood was over, Noah became drunk. And it's actually not right away after the flood, it was several years after the flood, but he became drunk. And he became uncovered in his tent. Last time when we went through this, we discussed why he became drunk and why he was uncovered in his tent. And without going through the entire discussion again, we explained at the time that Noah was completely he was repulsed by all of the immorality that had taken place before the flood, that which brought about the flood, all of the incredible immorality, the incredible lack of belief in God, lack of respect for each other, for other people's property, for other people's possessions, other people's things, the breakdown in society that he saw, for all the breakdown in society that we have seen and we continue to see, Noah saw much worse. And that's when the flood came. Noah himself was the only one who remained righteous at the time. The Noah Matzachin Bein Hashem is the only one that stayed true to Hashem. As we said at the time, that's very difficult to be the one person in the entire world who is true to Hashem, where everything else is deteriorating and falling apart, and you are the lone voice of righteousness. The barriers and the protections that Noach must have set for himself to keep himself from being influenced by all those negative forces must have been incredible. We pointed out that which brought the destruction completely repulsed Noach. And after the Mabul was over and he witnessed a desolate world which had been brought about by immorality, Noach was given the command by Hashem of pru urvu, of being fruitful and multiplying, of having more children. Fill up this world. This world now only has 8 people in it. Noach and his wife, his 3 sons and their 3 wives. Fill up the world. And Noach wanted to do just that. But Noach could not physically bring himself to have more children, to engage in the act to bring about children, because the immorality he had witnessed had so repulsed him, had created such a revulsion in Noah, he was unable to go about the process of having children. And so Noah decided that the way to be able to go about it would be to become drunk. And he used the wine as a tool to be able to go through the process. And that is why he became drunk. That's why it says he became drunk in the tent. Not out in the street, not out in the open. It was in the tent, because that's always associated with privacy. It was as a private act that he became drunk. Kenan, Cham's son, enters the tent and sees Noach in that way. And he tells Cham about it. And Cham then goes and tells his 2 brothers, Shem and Yefes. And Shem and Yefes, of course, do the right thing and they cover their father. But Cham, before Cham told his brothers about his father's condition, he did something. What did Cham do? Anybody remember from back then? Or from yesterday's Parsha? He castrated him. That's correct. Why did he do that? Because Cham said, our ancestor, Adam, had 2 sons. He had Cain and Hevel, Cain and Abel. And they, one killed the other over who was going to be the main person in the world. Who would own the world and who would be a subordinate. As we said at the time, who was going to play center stage and who would be merely a stagehand. That's what the fight was over, and that's why Cain killed Hevel. As a result, of course, neither became center stage, because later Adam had a third son, Shace, and we are descendants of Shace. But that was why Adam, that's why Ham did not want his father to have a fourth son. He said there were only two sons to Adam, and they couldn't get along over who would be in control of the world. And now Noah has three sons, and he wants more? He wants a fourth, a fifth, a sixth? Forget it. That's a bad idea. And so he castrated his father. And as a result, when Noah woke up from his stupor, and he realized what happened, what does he say? Arur Kenan. Cursed is Kenan. Kenan, the fourth son of Ham. Ham, who prevented me from having a fourth son, his fourth son, Kenan, will be cursed forever. Arur Kenan. Eved Abadim Yelechav, a slave to slaves, he will be to his brothers. And then he says, Baruch Hashem Elokei Shem. Blessed is the God, blessed is Hashem, the God of Shem. We descend from Shem, of course. Avraham was a descendant of Shem. Eliezer is a descendant of Kenan. Avraham is saying to Eliezer, you are from Kenan, who was cursed by Noah in that story. I am from Shem, who was blessed by Noah in that story for doing the right thing, for covering my father, for taking care of my father's honor. And so one who is cursed cannot cleave to one who is blessed. And that is why your daughter cannot marry my son, nor can anybody else from Kenan marry my son. That is the message that Avram is telling Eliezer. Avram is telling Eliezer more sharply, more deeply. He's telling him as follows. Why did Noah curse Kenan? Because Kenan, Ham, because Ham did not respect his father. In what regard did he not respect his father? He did not respect his father in regard to having children, in regard to bringing more people, bringing the next generation into the world. He did not respect his father in that manner. Says Abraham, I'm entrusting you to find a wife for Yitzchak. For what purpose? To bring the next generation, to bring the third of the three avos, of the three patriarchs of the Jewish people into the world. Your daughter can't be the one through whom that line will go, because that is precisely where your ancestor Kenan, your ancestor Ham, that's precisely where he was dishonorable to his father, and where the curse was then placed by Noah. And so in this arena, there cannot be a mixture of me and you. As much as I trust you, as much as you have been a very faithful servant, and as much as I even trust you to find a wife for Yitzchak, but it can't be from Kenan. And that's what Noah, that's what Abraham is telling Eliezer. It goes even beyond that. And this, I point out to you, this is something which I hesitate to point out to modern audiences, because modern audiences have difficulty realizing the holiness of Abraham, and on what level he was on, and where the way he was dealing with the whole issue at hand. But I point it out to you because I believe that the information will be helpful in bringing this whole idea together. You'll notice that, if I were smart, I would turn off the tape. But you'll notice, I'm warning the person who's listening. You'll notice that we are in chapter 24, Parakhav Dalet. You'll notice that in Pasuk Beis, verse 2, which actually starts on page 108, Vayomer Avraham el Avdo, and Avraham said to his slave, Zakan Beisel, the elder of his house, Hamoshel b'chol ha'shelo, who ruled over all that he had. Simna yodcha tachas yirechi, place your hand under my thigh. And that's the way it's translated. The actual, what was he telling him, put your hand under my thigh? What is that? Put your hand under my thigh?
Bris.
Okay, on the bris mila. That's where he was telling him to put his hand. Because when one takes an oath, one is supposed to hold something holy, like a sefer Torah. That's what they would do. If they really wanted to scare someone who had to take an oath in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, time of the temple, they would make him hold a sefer Torah as he swore. Who's going to dare lie under oath while actually holding a sefer Torah? That's pretty frightening. So the here they didn't have a Sefer Torah. The Torah had not been given yet. Abraham has Eliezer hold the first mitzvah that Abraham was given. The first mitzvah? That's not really the first mitzvah. There are other mitzvahs. There was the mitzvah of, for instance, pru or vu, of having children, which Hashem had given to Adam, and later to Noah. But this is the first mitzvah that was unique for Abraham and his descendants. And the mitzvah of Bris Milah is the mitzvah of the circumcision, is the mitzvah that is the message that procreating is a holy endeavor. And that is the message that Avram is sending Eliezer. You're going to have to swear by this Bris Milah, because I was given a commandment by God to make the act of procreating a holy act. Why was I given that mitzvah? Why did God give me that mitzvah? He didn't give it to anybody else, not the rest of the world. He gave it to me and my descendants. The Jewish people will have that mitzvah. Why is that so? Because the Jewish people are capable of sanctifying that act. Other people are not capable of sanctifying that act. But we who descend from Avraham, who in turn descends from Shem, who honored his father when his father was uncovered, we are capable of sanctifying that act. But you, Eliezer, who comes from Canaan, who comes from Kham, who dishonored his father, precisely in this area, is incapable of realizing how sanctified the act should be. And that is why our children cannot marry. And it is with that he has Eliezer take the oath that he cannot take a wife for Yitzchak from daughters of Canaan, including Eliezer's daughter. That is putting together what is happening over here. But now we come. Yes?
Yeah, so is it just Canaan and all his descendants, or is it all of Ham's descendants?
It seems that Noach specified Canaan. Mm-hmm. It seems that Ham was anyway cursed, because we also mentioned at the time that Ham violated the rule of not being engaged in physical relationships while on the Teva. While on the Ark, no one, not people, not animals, were allowed to be involved in physical relationships. Why? We said at the time, because the world was in Tsar, the world was being demolished, and therefore nobody had a right to be involved in such an act while that was going on. Three creatures violated that rule. One was the Orev, the raven. The second was the Kelev, the dog. And the third is Cham. And so when that happened, Cham himself was punished by God. But that wasn't the curse that Noah gave. He gave a curse to Canaan. So all of Cham's descendants received some sort of a curse, but it is Canaan who received this terrible curse from Noah.
When Eliezer swears on the bris, it would seem to me that Eliezer also had a bris, because the whole household had it, and that would be the reason it was binding, not because Avram had the bris, but he himself had the bris too, for the same reasons I would assume that you're saying, that there's some sort of holiness that's dealing with procreation, and therefore anybody in the household has to have the same family value.
Why would Eliezer have had a bris if he was not... You're correct, he did. Why would he have had a bris if he was not one of Abraham's descendants?
Because the Torah says he's the servant.
Okay, so the rule is that every male of your household, which means your children who are male and your slaves who are male, must have a bris. And that's why Eliezer did. So his bris was not for himself. It wasn't because he deserved to have a bris, but it was because he was the slave of Avraham who was able to have a bris. We talked about last week how as long as Eliezer was a slave to Avraham, he was extremely righteous. I don't want to digress this week. We talked about last week what happened to Eliezer, unfortunately, after he was freed by Avraham, and how he rapidly deteriorated. But as long as he was a slave to Avraham, he was extremely righteous. So righteous that he could even entertain the possibility that perhaps his daughter is fit for Yitzchak. It wasn't pie in the sky when Eliezer thought that. He really was very righteous, and so was his daughter. But it was only because he was subjugated to Avraham. As soon as he was left free, then it all fell apart. And as long as he was subjugated to Avraham, he had a bris because of the fact that he was under Avraham's control.
So any non-Jewish slave that is a slave of a Jew has to have bris milah.
Right.
And when that non-Jewish slave is then freed, that Jew is now is misgayer completely, correct?
That is correct now today, once there was a Jewish nation.
Correct.
It wasn't correct then.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then at that point, they have to have tipus dam again?
No.
So that bris milah counted?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, but that's not relevant to this discussion here.
Okay.
Right. Now, with all that we just described, and now it makes a lot of sense why Abraham cannot allow this union, and why he makes Eliezer swear not to go through with such a union. Nevertheless, when Eliezer says, what if I find that woman, the correct woman, in Haran, and she does not want to go back, then what? Abraham says, if that happens, all bets are off. Then do not return my son to Haran, and then you're free from this oath. That means that everything we just said, Abraham is saying, all that is fine and good, but that takes a back seat to Yitzchak going back to Haran. Why? What's so bad about Yitzchak going back to Haran to the extent that it is more important to preserve that than Yitzchak marrying a daughter of Canaan?
The house of Laban. The moral state of the house of Laban.
Well, Rivka grew up there and she was fine.
Right.
So.
But if she had not wanted to come back, it meant that there was nobody else. I mean, that it was totally. Nobody would have been worth.
Are you saying that if she would not have wanted to go back, that would have shown that she was not worthy?
There
was a test to see how worthy she was. Interesting. So you're suggesting it's not inherently bad for Yitzchak to go back. It's rather that if she's not willing to come to Eretz Yisrael,
both.
Okay, so you're saying that if she won't be willing to come to Eretz Yisrael, that shows that she's not really the right woman. She's not really righteous enough. Okay. Any other ideas?
It's my understanding that Canaan is worse than Haran, because of their immorality, their immodesty, their ethics, and they never change, their idolatry. But where he was born, where he comes from, they did change. Lavan changed. They did stop worshipping idols. So even though it's still a bad place for him to go to, because he's supposed to stay in Eretz Yisrael, someone can't come out from there and marry him, but not Canaan.
So that's an excellent point. So why is it even worse for Yitzchak to go to Haran?
Because he's supposed to stay in Israel.
Okay, so why? So what makes it so?
Hashem said.
Okay, that's a good point. Okay.
Was there still a price on Avram's head? Was it Nimrod after him? And if his son went back, and I was just reading, it said that Eliezer was the son of Nimrod, that there was some sort of maybe there would be some sort of bounty on him, and it would be too dangerous to go back.
It does not seem that it was a dangerous place for that reason.
Okay.
That it does not seem, because it was his family. It was Avram's family over there. Let's read the reasons Avram himself gives. Let's start from Pasuk Hey, verse 5. Vayomer lo ha'eved, the slave said to him, Ulai lo soveho isha lalechas acharai al ha'aretz hazos, maybe the woman will not want to go after me to this land. Hehashev ashives bincha, shall I return your son al ha'aretz asher yatzasa misham, to the land from which you left? Vayomre lav Abraham said to him, Hishamer lecha, guard yourself, pentashives benisham, lest you return my son to there. Hashem elokei shamayim, Hashem the God of the heavens, asher lekachani mi beis avi, that took me from the house of my father, umei eretz moladati, and from the land from where I was born. Vasher diberli, and that spoke of me, vasher nishbali, and swore to me, lemor saying, Lizaracha etein es haaretz hazos, to your seed I will give this land. Hu yishlach malachol lefanecha, he will send his angel before you. V'lakachta yishal livni misham, and you shall take a wife for my son from there. V'lo soveho yishal alechaz acharecha, and if the woman will not want to go after you, v'nikisa mishavua sizos, you shall be clean from this oath of mine. Rak es benilos hashev shama, only my son, you shall not return to there. What is this preamble here in Pasuk Zion, verse 7? Wouldn't it have made sense if he skipped verse 7? Let's read it without that. Abraham said to him, be careful, do not return my son to there. That's verse 6. That's Vav. Now let's skip to verse 8. Ches. And if she does not want to go after you, then you are clean from the oath, and only you shall not return my son to there. What is this whole Megillah in Pasuk Zion, verse 7? Hashem, the God of the heavens, who took me out from my father's house, from the land where I was born, that spoke of me and then swore to me, saying, to your seed I will give this land. He will send his angel before you, and you will take a wife for my son from there. In fact, this is also actually a little redundant. If you look back in Pasuk Gimel, he says, it's verse 3, V'ashbiachai, I will make you swear by Hashem, Elokei Hashemayim, Elokei Haaretz, by Hashem, the God of Shemayim, the God of Haaretz, the God of the heavens, the God of the earth. Asher lo sikachi shall livni, you shall not take a daughter for my son, a wife for my son, mibnosa kanani, from the daughters of Canaan, asher anochi yoshev bekirbo, that I am dwelling amongst them. Ki el artzi ve'omo larati teilech, but to my land and to my birthplace you shall go, v'lakachai shall livni li'itzchak, and you shall take a wife for my son, for Yitzchak. What is this whole business here in Pasuk Zion when he is telling him no? I mean, he asks a simple question. What if she doesn't want to come back? Then what? So give a simple answer. If she doesn't want to come back, then you're absolved from the oath. What's the whole...
Is it more of an explanation, Dan?
Okay. So what is the explanation?
Because he has to be in the land. He's given the land for his offspring. If he leaves the land, then the offspring won't be in the land. They'll be somewhere else.
I think he's perking up Eliezer too. You know, don't take it lightly. To ensure him, it's going to work out. You know, God has a plan, and he's assuring Eliezer that there's an angel going to go ahead. And
so God is going to do it. He's going to do it. But if he doesn't,
no, it's like
everything's going to be okay.
Yeah.
But if it isn't, it sounds like you're right. The verse sounds like what you're saying. It sounds like that he's trying to give him some confidence.
Yeah.
Right. Don't worry. It's going to be okay. God's going to take care of you. But just in case he doesn't do it, don't take him back there.
Well, there was a similar comment in Daniel where. They were the three friends of Daniel, Azariah, Mishael, and Ezra, that they said, we will not bow down to your golden image, and our God is able to save us. But even if he doesn't, we will not bow down. He will save us from your hand. But even if he doesn't, we will not bow down.
That's true. There is a statement over there like that. That's true. Rashi calls our attention to the following point. In Pasuk Gimel, verse 3, he says, and I will make you swear by Hashem, the God of the heavens and the God of the earth. Over here, in Pasuk Zion, verse 7, he says, Hashem, the God of the heavens, who took me from my father's house. What happened to the God of the earth? In verse 3, God was the God of the heavens and the earth. In verse 7, he's lost half his kingdom. He's only the God of the heavens. And what happened? He's what?
He's elevating
Abraham. Meaning?
He's leaving that place to go to a more spiritual place.
Okay. What Rashi says is that before Abraham is saying, in verse 3, he says, God is the God of the heavens and the earth. Then in verse 7, he says, Eliezer says, what if she doesn't want to come back? Now, Avram is trying to give an explanation why you shall not take my son back there. So he says, Hashem, the God of the heavens, who took me out of my father's house. You see, says Avram to Eliezer, now he's the God of the heavens and the God of the earth. What does that mean, he's the God of the heavens and the God of the earth? I mean, God can do whatever he wants, whenever he wants, which means He's in control of the heavens and the earth. So, of course, he's the God of the heavens and the earth. But for God to be in control of the sun, the moon, the stars, the planets, the animals, the insects, the water, that's easy. Because none of those things have free will. But for God to be in control of people, that's a trick. Because people have the ability to defy God. We are the only entities, we've mentioned this many times, we are the only entities, the only creations that have free will. And therefore we have the capacity, it's an incredible thing, we have the capacity to actually defy God. Even though He created us, and even though, as I am speaking right now, He is the one giving me the power to speak, as He is giving me the power to speak, I can say words that defy Him. As He is giving me the power to move my hand, I can use this hand to slap Bert across the face, which would be defying God, because God told me not to do that. He said, don't hit. Especially my elbow. So, but He's giving me the power to do it, and as He's giving me the power, I can use my free will to defy Him. So for God to be in control, the God to be recognized as the God of the earth, not only of the heavens, but of the earth as well, that's not so simple. That takes something. What does it take? That takes Abraham. That's what Abraham is saying. When I left my father's land, when God appeared to me and said, leave, He was the God of the heavens. He wasn't yet the God of the earth because people didn't recognize Him. Aside from me and a few handful of people, nobody recognized God. But now that He has taken me out of my land, brought me here, I have been Margil, His name. I have made His name a household name. I've spoken about Him. I've told people about monotheism. I've spread the word all around. Now, He's the God, not only of the heavens, but of the earth as well. That's what Rashi points out to us over here. And that's what he's telling Eliezer. He says to Eliezer, in verse 7, Pasuk Zion, he's going to tell him, don't return my son to there. Hashem, who was only the God of the heavens, He took me out of the place of my father's house. He took me out of the place where I was born. And He spoke of me, and He swore to me, your seed will get this land. Why? Why will your seed get this land? Why? Is it a reward? Why? Why will your seed get this land?
Yes.
Because you, Abraham, have recognized me and made me known to the world. Therefore, you and your descendants will get Eretz Israel. Because as we have pointed out many, many times, there were two things Abraham wanted. And he wanted only two things. And those two things are a child, a son, and the land. What's so important about the land? Because the land is the place that connects to Hashem, that connects to spirituality more than anywhere else in the world. Eretz Yisrael is directly connected to spirituality. We've described this many times in this manner, and I'll say it again. If you want to picture it, you picture spirituality coming from the heavens down to the earth. The way it hits the earth is it hits the land of Eretz Yisrael, specifically Yerushalayim, and from there it spreads around the globe. But the funnel from heaven to earth is hitting earth at the Beis HaMikdash, at Yerushalayim. And that's why if Abraham was going to be the one to bring God's glory into the world, he had to have the land. Without the land, it can't be done. That's why we are in exile. That's why we say we're in exile. We are in Galus. Because unless we're there, we cannot properly bring Hashem's name into the world. Abraham, who had demonstrated that he would be the one to do it, he would take center stage because he rose to the challenge. He took the responsibility to be the one to bring God's name into the world. Abraham, therefore, merited to get Eretz Yisrael. Avram said to Eliezer, if you're going to take Yitzchak back to Haran and leave Eretz Yisrael, what are you saying about my mission? What is Yitzchak saying about my mission? What is the message that we are saying to God? You know what we're saying to God if we do that? We're saying to God, thanks God, thanks for the mission, but no thanks. Take it back. I'm not interested. That's what a rejection of Eretz Yisrael is. Rejecting the land is rejecting the mission. And rejecting the mission is rejecting God. Abraham says to Eliezer, yes, I cannot allow your daughter or any Canaanite woman to marry my son because of that story that happened and the curse and the blessing. Because there seems to be an innate immorality that your people carry with you. And we cannot allow that mixture. And I cannot allow that union. But that may be a bad union. And it may create an incredible hurdle that we have to overcome if there would be such a union. But the union wouldn't be a rejection of God. It wouldn't be a rejection of the mission. But a rejection of Eretz Yisrael, that's a rejection of the mission. That's a rejection of God. And therefore, the one thing that will supersede my command that you shall not let my son marry a Canaanite woman is removing my son from Eretz Yisrael. That's the one thing that will supersede it. You can't cross that line. If the only alternative is that he leaves Eretz Yisrael, let him stay in Eretz Yisrael, marry a Canaanite woman with all of the problems that will bring. But that's it. We can't let Yitzchak leave Eretz Yisrael.
How did Abraham know that Eretz Yisrael was the place?
That's a very good question. We pointed out back at the end of Parshas Noach and the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha that he knew all along where the most spiritual place on earth was, even before God told him to go. Because you find at the end of Parshas Noach, which we just read yesterday, that already in the lifetime of his father Terach, Terach and Avraham and their families leave Ur Kasdim and they travel to Eretz Canaan. They're going to Canaan via Haran. And again, you're facing me, so I'll pretend the map is facing you properly. Ur Kasdim would be here, and Eretz Canaan over here, but you can't travel across because it's all desert. And so you have to travel in a crescent, which is the Fertile Crescent. And they left to travel via the Haran route, which is up here, down to Canaan. And they left from Ur Kasdim to the Leches Arza Canaan to go to the land of Canaan. Vayavohu an Haran. They got until Haran. Vayeshvu sham. They stopped there. And then Hashem appears to Abram and says, whoa, that's not enough. You got to keep going. And Abram then keeps on going to Canaan. But they knew all along where the place to be was. And that was in Canaan. Moreover, when they get to Canaan, Abram, it says in Parshas Lech Lecha, which we'll be reading this coming week, is moving slowly but surely south towards where? As he comes in from the northeast of Eretz Yisrael, he's heading south towards Yerushalayim, towards Jerusalem, because that's the holiest place. He knows where the holiest place is. Only he gets derailed because of the famine. He has to go down to Egypt, etc. He finally ends up there for the binding of Isaac. There seems to be that for those who were spiritual, they had some like a homing beacon to Canaan, to Eretz Canaan, to Yerushalayim. We also pointed out that Shem, the son of Noah, where did he take up residence? In Yerushalayim. He was the king of Yerushalayim. Melech Shalem is also in Parshas Lech Lecha. So there seems to have been some, when they were so spiritual, they could feel it. They knew where it was. Josh, you have a question?
Well, first thing, why did he take residence in Hebron instead of Yerushalayim when he was in Israel? And two, also, in Pasuk 9, I just read, and also the beginning of Lecha, it says, from your birthplace.
Mm-hmm.
It says that he's coming from a, where's the city we're talking about right now?
Haran?
Ur Kasdim.
Ur Kasdim.
Yeah, but he's from Ur Kasdim, but this is talking about when his birthplace, as mentioned, referring to the place of
The way Rashi explains it in Lech Lecha is you already left your birthplace, Ur Kasdim, now leave where your father's house is, which is Haran. Continue on. Right, well, it's the same idea. He spoke to me to tell me to continue on. Leave Ur Kasdim, leave, continue on. Don't, you have to break all your ties with the past. Go on. Why he lived in Hebron is a good question, which I'm not prepared to answer right now. That is a very good question. And also, Beersheba. Those two places where he lived, it's a very good question. So, Abraham, therefore, has set the stage for Eliezer. The top priority is Yitzchak must remain in Eretz Yisrael. We're not going to reject the mission. The mission must go on, no matter what. If possible, if we can have our cake and eat it too, keep him in Eretz Yisrael, and he cannot marry a daughter of Canaan. If that's not possible, if you can't have both, then stay in Eretz Yisrael but marry a daughter of Canaan. With that, Eliezer swears, and now he's ready to go and on a mission and find a wife for Yitzchak.
And even though he swore, didn't that put a lot of pressure to Eliezer because he wanted his daughter to marry him?
Sure, but Eliezer, because he was such a faithful servant, that once he swore, Avram trusted him. See, that's the other thing. You see, once he took the oath, Avram didn't doubt that he would be true to it. He did trust him.
So the oath then is Avram telling Eliezer, you can't take Yitzchak out of the land of Israel because God swore to give this piece of property to my offspring. Therefore, my offspring don't leave this land because maybe the oath has been broken. If his offspring leave the land of Israel, then maybe there's no connection anymore.
To what?
To the land of Israel.
Well, he's saying it would be a rejection of Hashem to go back.
That's what I'm saying. So that's the reason.
Yeah.
So the final reason is it's not just the mission, it's in a rejection to Hashem.
Well, the rejection of the mission is a rejection of Hashem. Right, correct.
Well, Avram could continue his mission,
but
the children and the continuing down the generations now is cut.
That's right. That's right. Because the whole point was to have a legacy, that it should go on and on and on.
Okay.
That's right.
Is the going down sort of finality? Like, he would go and come back. In other words,
it seems
he would not come back with his wife.
It seems that
that act seems to be
no. It seems from the way Eliezer is describing it, it seems that she won't come back with me. That she wants to stay there. Oh, the Yitzchak would go and they would live there. They would live in Haran.
There's no possibility that he would.
Yeah. Now, if it would mean go to bring her, I don't know why she wouldn't have gone with Eliezer. Although you could read it that way. If she won't go with me back to the sun, perhaps you could read it that way. And even just leaving for a moment is bad enough. Mm-hmm. That may go into the fact that he was a carbon that was mentioned before. And even for a moment, there's a problem.
And but how do you know that when you say all bets are off, that it would now be okay for Yitzchak to marry a Canaanite woman?
It wouldn't be okay. But it would be,
how do we know it's
permitted? There would be no oath. He said the oath is gone. He says, if not, v'nikisa mishvua zos, you are clean.
Clean from bringing the woman back. So that's the end of the whole story.
You're clean from the shvua, from the oath. Avram said, made him swear. He made him swear, don't take a wife from Canaan. So that oath is off. That's all. The oath is gone. So that means whatever's going to happen is going
to
happen.
So then he could give his daughter to him?
Theoretically. Now Rashi points out that there are other choices besides Haran and besides his daughter. There are other choices. But still, the fact remains the oath is off. The oath is off. There wouldn't be a binding oath not to do it. Now, we're not going to speak in depth about the next part of the Chumash until next week. But the next part, we'll give a preamble over here. The next part is where Eliezer actually goes to Haran, and we're all familiar with the famous story where he meets Rivka at the well, where he says to Hashem, "I'm going to have a sign for me." We're going to talk next week about superstition, about this with this sign that he makes that if the woman who I say give me a drink, and she says I'll give you a drink and your camels, she's the one. You know, testing God like that, we'll have to get into all that, how that works. Eliezer, when he goes now, he is going, if you are Eliezer, and you've gotten all these instructions from Avraham, and you have your own interests in mind, what are you going to be trying to do as you go? What's going to be your goal?
Figure out a way to fail.
Right? Wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't it be great if I go and I say to her, you know, you want to come back with me? It's going to be a grueling trip back. Oh my! Oh, we're going to walk both ways. We're going to walk, you know, whatever it is. You know, it's going to be. You would try to figure out a way of making it not happen, so that the oath will be off. But that's not what he does. Eliezer goes with complete faith, as Avraham trusts him. Because otherwise, it's ridiculous. Was Avraham so foolish? Here, he knows that Eliezer has a vested interest in failing. And he makes him take an oath, and he says, there's a way out. You know what the way out is? If you fail. And yet he still trusts him. How foolish can you be? The answer is, of course, Avram wasn't foolish. He was very intelligent. But Avram knew how trustworthy Eliezer was. It's an incredible thing, if you think about it, how much trust Avram had in Eliezer, despite the conflict of interest and the possibility of him deliberately failing. One of the we'll end with this for tonight. Yeah.
That Eliezer, I know we'll talk about it next week, but the fact that Eliezer does go on with it and fulfills it perfectly, just like Abraham did, doesn't this amend a little bit what?
Ham did. Oh, I see. It's hard to know. See, what Ham did, Noah cursed him forever. See,
so
at that point, for some reason, Noah. You know, you could say it's just one episode. You know, what's the big? It's one thing. But yeah, it was a big deal. Bear in mind, Noah lived for 350 years after the flood. I mean, he was alive for another 350 years. Who knows what could have been different? And it seems that what happened at that time, the world, it's like when something happens to a child. It affects the whole life. It's different than when something happens to an adult. At that point, the world was like it was in its infancy. The world was starting over again with Noah and his sons. And the world was being born anew because the world was totally destroyed in the flood. And in its infancy, Ham goes and does this. And that seems to have created a blemish forever.
That's kind of like when a baby is being formed in the womb.
Right.
The critical time. If
that's
something
right.
goes wrong, then...
That's right. It seems to have been a critical thing.
This book asks the question, Emosai Zohar Letzeis Mikla Arur Kishim Gamal Chesed Im Yitzchak. So when he did the...
Well, we said last week that after he did that, that after he found a way for Yitzchak, then he was allowed to go free. Avram let him go free.
But that takes him out of... It seems like it's taken out of the situation of being what cursed of being a slave then.
Yeah, it could be. So, or it could be it did diminish the curse to some extent. Could be.
There says, Notan lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Sfaro Ba'olam Sharuch Yamin.
Yeah, he did have very long life.
And then it made him Melech.
Yeah, we spoke about that last week. That's right. I'll just end with this one point, which is really disparate from what we've been talking about. But just... Just a side issue. When I was a senior in high school, my Rebbe at the time, who was Rabbi Tamer, that's Rabbi Tamer here, his father. He was my principal and in high school, and he was my Rebbe in 12th grade, would point out from this story the importance when seeking a mate of having an unbiased opinion involved, and where a person doesn't only use their own ideas, their own thoughts, because it's so easy to make a mistake based on our own biases. And so he pointed out that over here, Avraham thought it to be best that Eliezer go to find a wife. Eliezer, who would be a detached third party to find a wife for Yitzchak. Where later on, Yaakov is unable to do that because Yaakov has to run away from Esav. We just talked about that last week, and he ends up going himself. But he pointed out over here that the idea of having a third party involved is clearly brought out in the Torah over here with Eliezer being the third party to go. It's true, we spoke about last week about Eliezer's strength and his ability to take care of himself, etc., which is all true. But still, I think what Rabbi Kalman pointed out at the time has merit to bear in mind that point as well.
Okay.